Welcome to another episode of Grit Northwest. I'm Joe Cadwell, the writer, producer, and host of this show. In today's episode, we will hear part two of my recent interview with Josh Zolin, host of the Blue is the New White podcast. Josh is also the author of the book, Blue is the New White, The Best Path to Success No One Told You About Till Now, which pushes back on the oversold notion that the only way to have a solid financial security and career to be proud of is with a college degree. Josh and I will continue our conversation about what personal accountability, positive thinking, and professionalism can do to take your career to the next level. I hope you enjoy it. So now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Blue is the New White podcast, brought to you by WCE, where we shatter the perception of blue-collar skilled trades and show you how to be wildly successful without a college degree. Now, author, speaker, CEO, but most importantly, your host, Josh Zolin.
I'm curious about the lessons that you've learned through your travels as a commercial diver. Anything stand out?
Yeah, personal accountability, I think, Josh, is probably the first one. You have to be a responsible professional to actually make it in diving, or I would think any trade. People want employees that are going to be on time every day. People are going to want workers that have a good attitude, that are willing to learn, that can get along with other people on the job site. It's really important to find yourself sort of adopting a chameleon sort of mentality in order to remain successful, because there are so many challenges of the work, and then you start throwing in different type of personalities as well. So it's really important, I think, to again have that personal accountability. In my craft, it was very important to keep physicality on the forefront. You know, it's a very physical, arduous job, and you can get away with a lot of things in your 20s and 30s and even early 40s. I retired at the age of 53 from commercial diving, and I was still able to hold my own because of my attitude towards fitness and just sort of good healthy lifestyle choices. And I was getting kind of on the upper edge of actual people that still do the craft. And fortunately for me, I was able to call the shots and actually retire when I wanted to from the trade, and move my experience and my passion for teaching over to the apprenticeship program, and continue on as a contributing to the union, but in a different scope altogether.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in a minute. I got to say, you know, the answer of personal accountability is, I absolutely love that. Those that know me well know that I'm a big advocate of personal responsibility and personal accountability, you know, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I know part of it is the way that I was raised. You know, my dad's very old school, and he made sure to instill that in me in a young age. Or I also don't know is if, you know, I look around today, and I'm not going to take anything away from any generations that exist out there, because, you know, I think that there's a lot of stereotypes thrown around that maybe aren't incredibly accurate. But I do think that in this day and age, we do seem to have a personal responsibility issue in a lot of ways. And of course, I'm not talking about everybody, but, you know, I look around and it's just, it's the little things. You know, you mentioned being on time. You know, that's one of the smallest, easiest things that you can do to hold yourself personally accountable. You know, and I don't know, especially in what I do, I've seen not the opposite, but just not as much of a commitment to it. Is that something that you're seeing too?
I would say, In my time in the field, I'm going to say no, because we were such a tight-knit group of commercial divers in the Northwest. It's very difficult to make your name in the commercial diving industry as a union diver here in the Northwest. There's not a lot of turnover, so the people that do actually turn it into a full-time career are fairly responsible to begin with. They do have all those attributes that we talked about, and that's why they're on that job, and that's why they're in that role or that position. as an apprentice coordinator with the union now, it's one of the things that we are really trying to instill upon our members. I mean, Skillcraft is very, very important, but we have to instill upon our apprentices that, again, the personal accountability and the fact that you truly are an independent contractor. Even though you are in an organized labor union, each and every day you go to work, you're representing not only your employer and the union, but you're representing yourself. And that's truly what keeps you on the job. Your attitude and your ability to put 110% out each and every day is what ensures your place on that crew. And if you can't cut the mustard, there are plenty of people looking for these you know, good paying jobs with benefits and access to training and pension and safer working conditions and representation lined up. And so you are responsible for yourself. And if you have a family, for your family's needs by being a strong worker, bringing to every day to the job a great attitude and a willingness to get along and get the job done.
Yeah, no, that's such a great answer. And that's kind of what I was alluding to also when you said you're representing yourself. You know, there's so much to say about that, you know, in the industry. It's you really are. You're not only representing a company, you're not only, you know, representing your teammates, but you are also creating an image for yourself that you're gonna have to carry with you throughout your entire career. You know, which I think is why personal accountability is so important, you know, especially in the skilled trades and another reason why the skilled trades are great at teaching it, right? Because, you know, when you're out there doing things, you know, and you're assigned a task, you're building something, you're fixing something, it's your two hands on whatever that task is. And so there's not a whole lot of, you can't get around it. You know what I mean? You either do well or you don't. And when you don't, you have no choice really but to accept responsibility. Then your job becomes to learn from it.
That is for sure. And like you say, you know, having your hands on the work is super important. We really try to instill into our apprentices to also put your head into the work as well. And then you really begin to hit a craftsman level of proficiency when you begin to put your heart into your work. And when you get all three of those, your head, your hands, and your heart involved, yeah, the sky's the limit. You can start calling your own shots, and it's really a wonderful thing to reach that level. But you got to start somewhere, and that's usually with your hands and just trying to figure out, you know, your place in the market.
That's awesome. I think I just found my clip for your show: head, hands, and heart. I love that. No, that's fantastic. So we're gonna pick up a little bit at where we left off. You said you retired from commercial diving at 53. What happened next? How did you get into this other area of the union?
So I was on a really awesome run. The last 4 years of my career, I spent an inordinate amount of time on the road. I mean, commercial diving, I traveled a lot, but the last 4 years, I literally spent over 3 years away from my home, which meant sleeping in, you know, hotels all around the Northwest. And so after that 4 year run, I got home and my wife, who's a very patient woman for sure, said, you know, why don't you try to find something a little bit closer to home, and we'll get to reconnect a bit. And I thought, what a great idea. And fortunately, the regional training center for our council is about 9 miles from my house, the Pacific Northwest Carpenters Institute. And I knew there was a need to develop an apprenticeship program or apprenticeship component for the commercial divers in our pile driving program. So we don't teach people to commercial dive in the union. We actually take folks that have been through an accredited commercial diving school and enroll them into our pile driving program, which is part of our same local, the Pile Drivers and Divers, Local 196. And there was no curriculum, though. There was no designated pathway for people coming out of commercial diving school to come into our union as an apprentice. They either came into our local as a journey level worker, or they came in as a pile driver apprentice with nothing directly designed for them to continue their commercial diving education. So I was asked to help design a component for these people. And it turned out to be an awesome opportunity for me. It led the pathway. The training center said, "Hey, Joe's, we kind of like how you put together this apprenticeship program. Would you be interested in teaching some of the other components of our apprenticeship to our apprentices?" And I said, "That would be great, but you have to understand, I haven't hung a lot of drywall in my career. Drywall just kind of gets wet and blows away in the water. I haven't done a lot of stick framing. I don't know a lot about metal framing. I couldn't build scaffold to save my life unless it was underwater and I had a set of plans. So I have a limited skill set." And they said, "That's fine. We're going to find the right place for you." And I actually began teaching the introductory to intro class at our training center, which deals a lot with equipment certifications, the industrial forklifts, the rough terrain forklifts, the scissor lifts, the aerial boom lifts, and then sort of an overall broad strokes introduction for these new apprentices into our program. It's a 4-day class, 10 hours a day. And so that went really well. The staff at upper management staff at the training center said, "We like what you're doing there. Would you be interested in perhaps getting trained to be able to teach OSHA 30, construction math and blueprint reading," and all these things, you know, sort of fell into my wheelhouse. After about a year there, they then said, we have this position opening up. It's for a coordinator / hybrid instructor. So I actually have two roles now. I teach part-time and I'm a full-time coordinator, and I oversee the academic progression for apprentices at the training center.
I got to ask, you know, because this is something I love to get to, you know, when you reach a point in your career, when you can take the knowledge that you've accumulated, you know, over the years and help to transfer that to other individuals, you know, who hopefully can be as good or better than you are or were. What kind of satisfaction do you get from that?
It's huge. I tell you, to be able to have the ability to positively affect people's lives is so rewarding. I talked about teamwork early on with in the military. We definitely had a sense of camaraderie in the commercial diving field as a union diver, but it was somewhat insular. You work with those crews, you move on, and again, you're just always kind of representing yourself or your best interest, the best interest of your family. At this point in my career, I can truly say I'm turning around the my years of experience and helping people be the best that they can be. And I find it just immensely satisfying. Sometimes frustrating, I'll be honest with you, trying to show people what I believe is to be the right path, the right decision. But ultimately, people have to make their own decisions and determine what's important in their lives. But for the folks that I truly feel like I'm connecting with and showing the attributes of organized labor and skill, craft, and positive attitude is really, really rewarding for me.
Yeah, I'll bet. And that's often what I find too. You know, I ask a lot of people about, you know, the rewards of the skilled trades, and, you know, I get the response of helping people so often, you know, and it's funny because it can be in the beginning of their career, it can be at the end of their career, it could be all throughout, you know, but that's something that I found that remains consistent for a lot of people that I talk to, is that, you know, the skilled trades give them an opportunity to help people, whether that's the people they're servicing or whether that's the people they're teaching or training, you know, or even just their employers and they're helping grow a business. And, you know, there's so many different ways you can say it, but so it's interesting to hear you say that, because, you know, I think that there is a lot of value in, you know, that and what you do. And, you know, that's what we need, you know, for the skilled trades as a whole, not just for commercial diving, not just for, you know, any of the other courses that you teach, but the skilled trades as a whole, you know, people being willing to transfer their knowledge to those who want to learn, and, you know, really making it apparent why they should want to learn it.
Yeah, exactly. We have a saying in the education business and in the regional council that does representation for our members, that, you know, at some point when you move over to these other positions, you are no longer building the infrastructure, you're no longer building buildings, you're building people. And that's truly what our aim is to provide a pathway for a better life, middle class working Americans.
Yeah, I love that. So I'm gonna ask you one more question. This is something I ask everybody. We talk a lot on this show about, you know, success and how people have found success in the skilled trades and what they do. And no matter how you define it, you know, skilled trades can be a very, very great way to you know, achieve it. So I'm curious for you personally, how do you define success and how has your career enabled that for you?
I really, really appreciated in my time as a commercial diver, the ability to basically determine when and where I wanted to work, to have that autonomy, to be able to know that, yeah, I've worked really, really hard. I'm now going to take some time off with my wife. We're going to travel. Both of us love to travel at this point. I think I myself have visited over 54 countries around the world, and I've lived overseas for 10 years. I really like the financial stability that the union structure provides. Again, the livable wages and the access to benefits, not just for myself, medical benefits and dental and vision, not just for myself, but for my wife. Just that freedom to me is sort of my definition of success, knowing that I want to go to work and not that I have to go to work at this point in the game. I'm close to a retirement age, even though it's not on my radar to do so. I have at age 57, the ability to actually start drawing a pension from the union. I plan on working well past that, but knowing that I have that financial freedom and security is sort of my definition of success.
That's a great answer, you know, and I hope everybody out there is listening because, you know, that could be you. Joe, I can't tell you how much I appreciate, you know, the time that you spent with me today. You have a podcast. Why don't you go ahead and let people know about the podcast and anywhere else that they can find you?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for asking about the podcast or mentioning the podcast, Josh. Yeah, about 2.5 months ago, I was reelected to the position of Regional Council President for the Pacific Northwest Carpenters Union. We're a 6-state regional council, part of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, and our 6 states are Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and Alaska. We cover about 1.1 million square miles, and we have 29,000 carpenters actively working in about 7 different craft. And as the Regional Council President, newly reelected to a 4-year term back in August, I wanted to do something to reach out and expand the role of president. For the first 2 years that I was the president, I kind of came in halfway through another person's term. I was learning the ropes. I was learning what it meant to run a monthly regional council meeting or a quarterly delegate meeting. When we have our delegate meetings, it's 165 people delegates in a room, and I orchestrate that meeting. I facilitate the conversation and the dialogue that is designed to better our members' lives. It was a huge leap for me, stepping up onto the big stage, stepping up in front of a podium. Fortunately, I had a lot of experience with public speaking prior to that, and I continued to work on that even till today. And it helped me have the confidence to be able to lead this organization. So getting back to your question, or to your earlier thought there, Josh, in August, I said, how can I affect and better the lives of our 29,000 members? It's COVID now. Travel is difficult. I'm not going to make to all our different locals throughout our 1.1 million square miles. Let's start a podcast. And I clearly remember the day. I was in my backyard, sunny backyard. On a Sunday, I looked over at my wife and I told her, and she just shook her head like she normally does when I come up with some of these ideas. And I took a deep dive into it. I had never done podcasting before.
No pun intended.
Right. That is correct. The podcast is called Grit Northwest. It's abbreviated Grit NW. And you can find Grit Northwest, which comes out approximately twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. I drop smaller episodes. Sometimes they're as short as 5 minutes. And then one of my longer interviews can be up to 35 minutes. And Grit Northwest is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Amazon Music, TuneIn. It's also available online if you go to buildnw.org/podcast, and you can get exposed to what Grit is. And Grit isn't specific just to the members in the Northwest. I've got listeners all across the U.S. now, and which really blows me away for something that's really only been around for a few months. And I try to bring in subject matter experts or personalities of interest to interview. It's an interview-based podcast, much like yours is, Josh. And we talk about everything from growth mindset and leadership to politics, to one of the darker sides of our industry, the construction industry, the high rate of suicide, and brought on subject matter experts about that. We talk about personal finance management from the apprentice phase all the way up to the retiree, and really just trying to add a variety of content and information for our listeners. And it seems to be really well received at this point. So again, GritNW, if you're looking for it on your smart device.
Awesome. And I will definitely be adding that to my listening list. Joe, thank you. And yeah, I mean, just again, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your story, and for everything that you do for the trades and the people in it.
Well, that wraps that up. Thanks again, Josh, for the opportunity to be on your show. If you want to hear more personal accounts of people finding lucrative and satisfying careers in the trades, be sure to check out Josh's website, blueisthenewwhite.com, or look for his podcast on Spotify. Grit Northwest is a proud member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. For more information, visit laborradionetwork.org. Till next time, this is Joe Cadwell reminding you to work safe, work smart, and stay union strong.